Genesis 42:29 to 43:34, the 40th talk in a series in Genesis, was presented by David Crabtree on October 12, 2003 at Reformation Fellowship. The copyright for this recording is held by Gutenberg College, Inc., 2003. Gutenberg College is a nonprofit organization, and contributions may be made at www.gutenberg.edu. This material may be copied and distributed in whole for non-commercial and educational purposes, subject to the inclusion of this introduction. All other rights reserved.
Were you looking at Genesis chapter 42? The middle of it, that's where we'll start. Last week I made a mistake, at least one. When Joseph first sees his brothers, last week I think I mentioned that he was 30 years old, so that's the difference between 17 and 30. But in fact, there have been the 7 years of plenty in the intervening time, and we've started into the period of famine. We don't know how far we are into the famine. So Joseph had to have been over 37. So there's at least a 20-year difference between the time when he was sold into slavery and the time when he sees his brothers. So I wanted to correct that. Let me give you a brief recap of where we are, and then we'll launch into the middle of chapter 42. If you'll recall back, Joseph was sold into slavery, became a slave, and then through a false accusation was put into prison, was in prison for a number of years, but finally he had the opportunity to interpret the dreams of the Pharaoh and to give Pharaoh advice. And the Pharaoh was impressed with both, that he interpreted the dream and that he gave very sound advice. And Pharaoh, in response to that, chose to make Joseph the number two man in Egypt, the vizier of Egypt. And the dreams that Joseph had interpreted predicted a period of 7 years of plenty followed by 7 years of famine. And what Joseph had suggested is using those 7 years of plenty to store up food to make it possible to survive the 7 years of famine. So Joseph was put in charge of that whole operation. And for 7 years, he has been diligently, like a squirrel, putting away all of the surplus grain, getting all of Egypt ready for the famine to come. So the famine arrives. And it's not clear how far into the famine we are, but before too long, Joseph's family back in Canaan, which is also being affected by a famine at the very same time, they are put into a position where they need grain. And everybody else is coming to Egypt to get grain because there's no grain in the entire region. And so Joseph's brothers are sent by Jacob down to get some grain. They come and they appear before Joseph, and Joseph recognizes them. And Joseph, having this disparity of knowledge, he knows who they are, but they don't know who he is. He elects to not reveal who he is immediately. He elects to, in fact, treat them rather harshly. He accuses them of being spies, which he knows is not true. He also accuses them of not being honest men, which he knows to be true. And he speaks harshly to them. And in response, they say, "Oh, no, we're not spies. You see, we're all from the same family, and our family lives at such and such an address, and our phone number is such and such, and we can tell you all kinds of details about us. In fact, we have another brother back home." And Joseph says, oh, then if you're going to prove that you are honest men, go get your brother and bring him back. Well, they know that's problematic. He couldn't come in the first place because Jacob couldn't let him leave his sight. And in the midst of this, then the brothers start accusing each other of being at blame for this. Reuben says, I told you you shouldn't have killed Joseph. I told you you shouldn't have done that. That's why this is happening to us. And Joseph, they don't know it, but Joseph understands their language. He understands the conversation that they think they are having just between themselves. And Joseph decides to throw them all into prison. And he says, I'm going to let one of you go back and get Benjamin and bring him back here. He throws them all in prison for 3 days. And then it's not clear, it doesn't make this explicit, but I think what's going on is Joseph, over those 3 days, has kind of come to terms that at first there's the temptation to just get vengeance. And that's why he throws them all in prison. But he has really forgiven them. And he reminds himself of that over a 3-day period. And as a result, he changes the terms of the deal. And he says, one of you stay here in prison, and all of the rest of you can go back, take grain back home, but bring back that other son so that I know that you are not spies and that you are honest men. And the one that he keeps back and puts in prison is the second oldest, not Reuben, whom he has become aware was not involved in the plot to sell him into slavery, who had actually taken actions to keep that from happening. But it's the second oldest, Simeon, then, that is put into prison. And the others are sent off. And Joseph has all of the money that they paid for the grain put back in their sacks. And they start back home, and they open up one of the sacks to feed grain to the animals, and the money's there. And they're wondering, what is going on? How did this happen? Now we're in real trouble. Okay, so that's where we left off last time. We'll pick up then the middle of chapter 42 at verse 29. When they came to their father Jacob in the land of Canaan, they told him all that had happened to them, saying, the man, the Lord of the land, spoke harshly with us and took us for spies of the country. But we said to him, we are honest men, we are not spies. We are 12 brothers, sons of our father. One is no more, and the younger is with our father today in the land of Canaan. And the man, the Lord of the land, said to us, by this I shall know that you are honest men. Leave one of your brothers with me, and take grain for the famine of your households, and go. But bring your youngest brother to me, that I may know that you are not spies, but honest men. I will give your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. Now it came about, as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. And when they saw, and their father saw, their bundles of money, they were dismayed. And their father Jacob said to them, you have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, you may put my 2 sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taken, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. Okay, they're coming back to their father. They know they're in a bind. They know that in order to get any more grain, they have to take Benjamin back with them, and they're going to need more grain. But they know that their father is going to keep them from taking Benjamin down there, so they're caught between a rock and a hard place. So they come, and probably with a certain amount of apprehension, explain to Jacob what the situation is. And they spell it out. They explain what happened, that they appeared before the man. They appeared before Joseph. And this is what happened, and this is the situation. Interestingly, there's no indication at this point that they told Jacob about the money they found in the sack. That's a complicating factor that they don't bring up at this point. Jacob doesn't respond initially. We have no record of a response. Jacob must be thinking, how can this be? I took action to protect Benjamin. And that was, I didn't send him down. I kept him here so he'd be safe. And now as things have unfolded, it's like danger has come to Canaan to grab him. Despite all of my efforts to protect Benjamin, it's like fate has conspired against me. And now, again, it's threatening to take Benjamin. He must also be wondering, he must also just be shocked and not know what to say. He didn't expect this at all. It's come out of the blue. But then the situation turns from bad to worse, because then they open up all of the sacks and there's money in every single bag. So now what chance do they have of proving that they are honest men, the very thing that they need to prove? They've got this money. That's very incriminating. Now, it doesn't say what Jacob's response to finding the money is, whether he thinks that they stole it or whether it, how do you account for it? That's a bizarre thing that's happened. There is no good explanation. But Jacob does respond to the situation in general, and his response is very despairing. Joseph is gone. Simeon is gone. He's counted off Simeon, which is interesting. Simeon is gone, and now you want to take Benjamin. And he says, you have bereaved me of them. Let me read his words. You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me. What's interesting about this response is that it's not really a rational response. He's just seeing these three sons that have been taken away from him, but the situation is clearly more complicated than that. They aren't necessarily gone. That is, it's possible that they could send Benjamin down and they could explain the money situation. And if those things both went well, all of the brothers could come back, except Joseph. I don't think that he foresees that as a possibility at all. But the other 11 could all come back. That's one possibility. The other possibility would be that they take Benjamin and go down, and they are not able to account for the money situation. And then they would probably all be thrown in prison. He'd lose all of his sons, or at least the sons that go down. The other possibility is that Benjamin doesn't go down, in which case, if they go down, all of them would be thrown into prison, whichever ones go down. Or they could all stay home, in which case Simeon would be lost. They wouldn't get him back. So the situation is more complex and in a sense, potentially bleaker than Jacob has laid it out. All he's looking at is the loss of the three sons. Furthermore, his response is irrational in that he can't really figure out where to place the blame. He says, "You have bereaved me." So he's placing the responsibility on them at the beginning of his statement. But at the end, it's as if he's blaming fate. He says, "All these things are against me." So Jacob, I think, is just emoting here. It's not really a rational response. It's just, how could this happen? Reuben then steps in. Reuben is the oldest. And I'm sure he feels a sense of responsibility here. And he wants to step in and show some leadership. And so he makes an offer. And it's kind of a strange offer. He says, "Let me take Benjamin down. We have to take Benjamin down if we're going to get any food. Let me take Benjamin down, but I will be responsible for him. In fact, to show you how serious I am about this responsibility, if anything happens to Benjamin, you can kill my two sons." Very strange offer. Apparently he's thinking two lives for two lives. Benjamin and Simeon on the one hand, if anything happens, you can kill my two sons. On the one hand, it seems like a very valiant and noble kind of offer. He's obviously taking this seriously, his responsibility seriously. He's risking the lives of his sons. His descent, his lineage is at stake here. So on the one hand, he's taking it seriously. But on the other hand, is he taking any real risk? Well, think about it. If he's unsuccessful, he takes Benjamin down, something happens to Benjamin. Is Jacob going to say, "I am going to kill my two grandchildren because Benjamin didn't come back alive"? Reuben isn't laying his own life on the line. He's laying the life of his sons, and it's unlikely, it seems to me, that Jacob would ever act on that. So it sounds very noble on the one hand, but it's kind of strange and kind of avoiding responsibility in a sense on the other hand. In any case, Jacob says, "No way. You are not going to take Benjamin down. I'm not going to run that risk." Reuben had not protected Joseph earlier when Joseph was sold into slavery. Jacob's not going to run the risk of turning him over to Benjamin at this point. Benjamin, in Jacob's eyes, has not only replaced Joseph as his son that he really invested everything into, but Benjamin has even grown in importance beyond what Joseph had ever been. Benjamin is everything to Joseph and to Jacob. And the other brothers, you can see where this would be an opportunity for jealousy again. I mean, they had been jealous of Joseph before, and that's why they wanted to get rid of him. And now it's even more of an occasion for jealousy. Notice what Jacob says, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left." You can just see the other brother saying, "We're here. We're still here." But Jacob has really focused and invested his life in Benjamin as a substitute for Joseph. And the brothers must feel that. But in any case, Jacob's response ends all discussion. There's no more talking about taking Benjamin and going back to Egypt at this point. And so the discussion ends right there. Everybody puts that behind them. They go on with living their lives until we get to chapter 43. I'll read the first 15 verses. Now the famine was severe in the land, so it came about when they had finished eating from the grain which they had brought from Egypt, that their father said to them, "Go back, buy us a little food." Judah spoke to him, however, saying, "The man solemnly warned us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.' If you send our brother with us, we will go down and buy you food. But if you do not send him, we will not go down. For the man said to us, 'You shall not see my face unless your brother is with you.'" Then Israel said, "Why did you treat me so badly, by telling the man whether you still had another brother?" But they said, "The man questioned us particularly about us and our relatives, saying, 'Is your father still alive? Have you another brother?' So we answered his questions. Could we possibly know that he would say, 'Bring your brother down?'" And Judah said to his father, Israel, "Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, we as well as you and our little ones. I myself will be surety for him. You may hold me responsible for him. If I do not bring him back to you and set him before you, then let me bear the blame before you forever. For if we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice." Then their father Israel said to them, "If it must be so, then do this. Take some of the best products of the land in your bags and carry down to the man as a present a little balm and a little honey, aromatic gum and myrrh, pistachio nuts and almonds. And take double the money in your hand, and take back in your hand the money that was returned in the mouth of your sacks. Perhaps it was a mistake. Take your brother also, and arise, return to the man. And may God Almighty grant you compassion in the sight of the man, that he may release to you your other brother and Benjamin. And as for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved." So the man took this present, so the men took this present, and they took double the money in their hand, and Benjamin. Then they arose and went down to Egypt and stood before Joseph. We don't know how much time has passed between when the brothers first arrived back in Canaan before Jacob and when this event occurs. It all depends on how much food they brought back from Egypt and how quickly they ate it. But the famine goes on, and whatever food they brought back, those food stores have been exhausted. So Jacob, looking at the situation, he turns to his sons and he says, "Go back, buy us a little food." It's as if he's saying, this is a trivial thing, just go back and get a little food. Well, there are complications to this. It's not as simple as that. And Jacob is speaking as if it's as simple as that. Judah brings a little bit of reality to the situation and reminds him that it's not as simple as he's putting it. He reminds them that unless they take Benjamin down, they are not even going to see the man that they need to speak to grant them the food. And at this point, Jacob responds and accuses the brothers then of having loose lips. They said too much. Why did you say so much? Why did you give this man the opportunity to put us in this situation? It's your fault. So Jacob apparently has been mulling over this and has kind of settled on a stance towards the situation in which he's placing blame on the brothers. They did it to Jacob very specifically. He says, "Why did you treat me so badly by telling the man whether you still had another brother?" Jacob's in one of those situations where it's very human. I'm sure we can all identify with it. It's a very uncomfortable situation where you can't see an easy way out. And you look around and your thinking is, there must be someone here who I can blame for the situation that I'm in. We want to find some scapegoat, someone that we can blame. But his blame is fairly irrational here, and that's Judah's response. How could we know that just giving him the information that we had another brother would put us in the situation? There was no way for us to know. And besides, he was pressing us for specific information about the family. This is interesting because it wasn't clear earlier that that was the case. But now, in what Judah is saying, it becomes apparent that Joseph was really probing for information about his father, about his youngest brother. And you can see what's happening. Joseph has been separated for all of that time, and he wants desperately to know how they're doing. So he asks these questions without betraying the fact that he is their brother. Judah then comes up with an offer that he makes for Jacob in this situation. And the offer is similar to that of Reuben's. He is going to take responsibility personally for Benjamin. But his offer is a little different, and I want us to look at how it is different. Judah says, "Give me Benjamin, and I will make sure that he is protected, and we will go down and we will get grain. If anything happens, you can hold me personally to blame forever." So the difference here is Judah is taking responsibility on himself personally. And he sees the weight of that. It's an eternal guilt that he will bear, blame that he will bear. And he's willing to take that on. If only Jacob will not let them go down to Egypt. Then he throws in something. His response to Jacob, he's explaining to Jacob, look, we only have one option. If we don't go down for grain, there are lots of people that are going to die. There is no good option. We have to take Benjamin down and get grain. But I will be responsible for Benjamin. So he's just giving his father a dose of reality here. Then he goes on to say, "For if we had not delayed, surely by now we could have returned twice." There's a sense in which he's being respectful towards his father. He's waiting for his father to make the decision. Judah is not acting. He doesn't just take Benjamin and take off. He wants his father's okay on the one hand. But on the other hand, he can't help but throw in this last line. You know, if you had decided this sooner, we could have been down and back twice. So there's a sense in which he's being respectful, but there's another sense in which he's not. He's kind of teetering on the edge here. But Jacob sees the reality of the situation. He realizes there are no choices here. There's only one possibility. We've got to send Benjamin down. We have no option. But Jacob, being Jacob, acts like Jacob acts. If you remember back to his conflict with Esau, and he wanted to reconcile with Esau, and thinking through how he would do that, he set up this elaborate procedure whereby Esau would confront parts of his household, and they would come bringing gifts to kind of soften Esau before he actually met up with Jacob. Remember that scenario? Well, Jacob is being Jacob again and thinking in those same terms. We need to put together the best gift that we can put together in a time of famine. We'll put together the best gift of what this land has to offer to someone who has everything in Egypt. Give that as a gift to this man, and perhaps God will have compassion. They are also supposed to take all of the money that was in the sacks and give that back. Perhaps that money got there by mistake. And take additional money then to buy more grain. So they'll be getting no free grain. They're paying for everything and making amends. And he concludes by saying, "As for me, if I am bereaved of my children, I am bereaved." He reaches the point where he can even let go of Benjamin. Benjamin has become really important. Benjamin has become his life. And he reaches the point where he can say, "But if that has to be taken away from me, then so be it." So they gather together this gift. They pack everybody up, including Benjamin, and take off for Egypt. Verse 16. When Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to his house steward, "Bring the men to the house and slay an animal and make ready, for the men are to dine with me at noon." So the man did as Joseph said and brought the men to Joseph's house. Now the men were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house, and they said, "It is because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we are being brought in, that he may seek occasion against us and fall upon us and take us for slaves with our donkeys." So they came near to Joseph's house steward and spoke to him at the entrance of the house and said, "Oh, my lord, we indeed came down the first time to buy food. And it came about when we came to the lodging place that we opened our sacks, and behold, each man's money was in the mouth of his sack, our money in full. So we have brought it back in our hand. We have also brought down other money in our hand to buy food. We do not know who put our money in our sacks." And he said, "Be at ease. Do not be afraid. Your God and the God of your father has given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money." Then he brought Simeon out to them, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their donkeys fodder. So they prepared the present for Joseph's coming at noon, for they had heard that they were to eat a meal there. This is a poignant scene. Joseph must have been watching on a daily basis for his brothers to return. He knew they had to return. They had no choice. They would be coming back. The only question was, would Benjamin be with them or not? And he sees them at the distance, and Benjamin is with them. And he must have just been overwhelmed with gladness at the sight of his brother. And so he gives instructions to his house steward that a feast is to be prepared. And for that feast, an animal is to be killed that will be prepared for them to eat. It's interesting because Joseph, being separated from his brothers, was marked by a meal and the killing of an animal. And here at the other end, and when they're being reunited, we have the same two things showing up. So they come into the house. It must have been very scary because they're being brought to Joseph's house, but they don't know why. And their minds are racing. And all they can think of is, he wants to have an occasion to grab us, arrest us, and take us and sell us into slavery. Very likely. As if he needs an occasion, and if it's likely that he's going to take them and sell them into slavery. There are It is interesting to see the way that the Bible depicts the psychology of someone who has turned evil. It is as if they can only see the world through their eyes. And they assume that everyone else sees the world the same way. So it's as if they're saying, well, if I were Joseph, what would I do? And this is what they did to Joseph earlier. They pounced on him. They found an occasion to pounce on him and then sell him into slavery. And they're looking at what Joseph is doing, and the only thing they can imagine is, well, he would do what I would do. A similar kind of thing happens with, I find it interesting when I read the story of Cain earlier. Cain has just killed Abel, and God comes to him and tells him, you're going to be a wanderer across the face of the earth. And remember Cain's response. His response is, oh, that's unbearable, because everyone who finds me will kill me. Well, that's what Cain did. That Cain is projecting his own perspective on the world, the way he sees it, how he would do things, onto everyone else. Which means that one who is given over to evil can never see someone doing something good out of good motives. He can only assume that they will do evil. And if it appears to be good, there are sinister motives behind it. In any case, that's what they're assuming that Joseph is going to do, pounce on them and sell them into slavery. So they take quick action. They're thinking, we've got to get to the house steward and explain to him the money situation before Joseph raises the issue. So they take him aside as they're going in, and they say, wait a minute, before we go in, let me explain something to you. You know that money? We didn't steal it. Here it is. It's back. We don't know how it got in our sacks. And the steward apparently he's in on this whole thing. He was involved in putting the money in the sacks. He knows how it got there. And now they're coming to him and they're saying, well, we don't know how it got there, but here it is back. And his response is, your God and the God of your fathers gave it to you. Don't worry, we got full payment. So apparently that's what he was instructed by Joseph to tell them. So he's saying, no problem. No problem. So the brothers go in. Simeon is released from prison, reunited with them. They are given water to wash their hands and their feet and to prepare for the meal. And they are given an opportunity to feed their animals. And they prepare their present then to be so that they can go before Joseph and give him the present that they have brought. Verse 26. When Joseph came home, they brought into the house to him the present which was in their hand and bowed to the ground before him. Then he asked them about their welfare and said, is your old father well of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? And they said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed down in homage. As he lifted his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, he said, is this your youngest brother of whom you spoke to me? And he said, may God be gracious to you, my son. And Joseph hurried out, for he was deeply stirred over his brother, and he sought a place to weep. And he entered his chamber and wept there. Then he washed his face and came out, and he controlled himself and said, serve the meal. So they served him by himself and them by themselves, and the Egyptians who ate with him by themselves, because the Egyptians could not eat bread with the Hebrews, for that is loathsome to the Egyptians. Now they were seated before him, the firstborn according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men looked at one another in astonishment. and he took portions to them from his own table. But Benjamin's portion was five times as much as any of theirs. So they feasted and drank freely with him. So they're brought in, and Joseph begins to ask them questions, and he asks about his father. You can imagine what Joseph is thinking. Joseph has decided to go through this process of keeping secret who he is in order to put his brothers through this experience of an injustice. And I think it's a calculated thing that he is doing. But there is some risk involved. His father is back in Canaan where there is no food. And Joseph is wondering, by doing what I've done, have I run the risk of my father dying? So the first question he asks is, how is my father doing? Is he still alive? And he is reassured that he is. Then all of the brothers bow down in homage before him. The first dream that Joseph had had is now being fulfilled right before him. Remember, in the first vision, the brothers were all gathering wheat and putting together their sheaves, and all their sheaves went and bowed down before Joseph's sheaf. So here we have that dream coming true. Then he looks up and he sees Benjamin. It's not clear how much younger than Joseph Benjamin is, but he's probably several years younger than Joseph. So Joseph, who was 17 when he was sold into slavery, even if he's 3 or 4 years older, Benjamin was still young, barely an adolescent when they were separated. So this must have been quite a sight. He hasn't seen him for a very long time and probably wouldn't have recognized him on the street. He sees him and he says, "May God be gracious to you, my son." And at that point, Joseph can't contain himself anymore. He has to turn away or else he's going to give himself away. He turns himself away and he goes into a back chamber and he cries. And he cries until he can gain control of himself again. He washes up and then he comes out back out before them. And he tells his servants at that point to serve the meal. Now, the meal has to be served under rather elaborate circumstances because Egyptians don't care for the Hebrews. And by custom, they will not eat at the same table as the Hebrews. Now, I think what's happening here is we have three separate tables. The Egyptians are all eating separately, and these are all the assistants to Joseph. The brothers, they are eating at another table because they are Hebrews. And I think that we have Joseph eating separately, not because he's a Hebrew, but because of his position. I'm assuming that that's the case. But because of his position, he has the privilege of eating at a table separately. So that's the scenario. We've got three tables for this particular banquet. But Joseph has set things up so that as the brothers go and they see their nameplates at their settings, that they are in order of birth. So Joseph keeps doing things that indicate that he's smarter than he ought to be. The brothers can't understand how he knows what he knows, how he knows what questions to ask, how he knows what order to put them in. And they must be thinking, this guy is something special. I mean, he's got access to knowledge that is not typical for human beings. And he presents to Benjamin then, what is it, five times the portion? It must be a lot of food. I mean, it must be pretty conspicuous that Benjamin is getting special treatment here. And once again, the brothers would have occasion to be jealous of what's going on. Benjamin seems to be getting special treatment, not only from Jacob, but also from the vizier of Egypt. And in that sense, they're getting slighted. So once again, we've got this meal at the reunification of the brothers. And at this meal, just like the meal that was eaten when Joseph was in the cistern, the brothers are separated. So we have a little symmetry going on here between the two events. So they feasted and drank freely with him. And that's where we'll stop the account this week. And Judah in this account. Reuben was the firstborn, but he's kind of a pathetic figure. If you'll remember back, he slept with one of his father's concubines. And in that culture, that act was like making a claim on the authority of the father. And he's doing that before his father is dead. So there's something grasping about that act, grasping for the authority that of his father prematurely. But then we have him in the instance of when the brothers pounce on Joseph and want to kill him, that Reuben, the firstborn, steps in and says, "No, don't kill him." That's a noble thing that he does. But what's interesting is he doesn't confront them directly. What he does is he comes up with an alternative plan. He says, "Let's put him in the cistern." And he's thinking, "I'll come back later and save him." So rather than taking on his brothers directly and saying, "No, we can't do this. This is wrong," he decides that he's going to save Joseph by a kind of roundabout route rather than taking it on directly. Then we have this other situation in which he needs to take Benjamin down to Egypt in order to get more food. And he says, "I'll take responsibility. If anything happens to Benjamin, you can kill them." I mean, it's a bizarre, on the one hand, it's admirable, but on the other hand, again, it's not quite taking responsibility. So he turns out to be kind of a pathetic character in this book, I would say. And as we'll see at the end, he is not the one that inherits the birthright, inherits the blessing from Jacob. Judah, on the other hand, is not a whole lot better. Judah, as you will recall, also played a part in that initial event when Joseph was sold into slavery. And it's not clear what's going on in Judah's mind. But Judah is the one who suggests, "Let's not kill him. Let's sell him into slavery." Now, is he being merciful there? Or is he saying, "We can get money out of this"? It's not clear whether it's mercy or greed that's driving him at that point. Then later on, a whole chapter is devoted to Judah, the situation in which his daughter-in-law, by rights, should have been married to the other of Judah's sons. And Judah, his first two sons having died after having been married to her, he decides, "I'm not going to marry my third and last son to her." So he refuses to fulfill the duty that he has with respect to his daughter-in-law. So the issue there, I believe, is Judah is irresponsible. Well, now in this section, Judah steps forward and is willing to take full responsibility for Benjamin. And I think very, very sincerely so. He's saying, "If anything happens to Benjamin, I will be to blame before you forever." So I think he's fully taking responsibility here. But on the other hand, there's something a bit disrespectful about it, as I pointed out before. that last statement where he says, if you had decided sooner, we could have been down and back twice by now. And he hasn't become a good guy, but there's a sense in which he has come to learn a certain amount of responsibility. And we'll want to follow this on through because this develops a little bit more later. The other thing that I think is interesting here is Jacob's role in this section that we just read. I am convinced that as we look at the portrayal of Jacob earlier in Genesis, he ends up being an impressive person. He starts out a conniver and a deceiver, someone who manipulates, maneuvers, and gets what he wants. But as time goes on, God tempers him and brings him to the point where he realizes that he cannot control his own circumstances like he thought he could. Life is too big for him to control, and that he needs God to be the one who takes charge of his life, such that he's no longer the manipulator and deceiver. And so I think that the way Jacob is depicted, he really does come to the point of understanding faith, understanding who he is and who God is, and his need for repentance. But what happens in this section is Jacob loses all perspective. Jacob has elevated Benjamin to a position where Benjamin is life for Jacob. You take away Benjamin, you take away Jacob's life. Jacob has got to the place where he has invested too much in his son. And because he has invested so much in his son, he becomes irrational. But Judah comes along and he says, Jacob, you've got to look at things realistically. We have no option. We have to take Benjamin down to get food or everybody dies. And what's encouraging to me is Jacob in that situation says, you're right. That is the way things are. And I have been holding to Benjamin too tightly. That if God wants to take Benjamin away from me, then God has the right to take Benjamin away from me. And he reaches that point and he says, so be it. If I'm bereaved of my son, I'm bereaved of my son. I think that is extremely encouraging. Because we have someone who I'm convinced is actually an impressive man of faith. But even an impressive man of faith can lose perspective, get things out of kilter. But the thing about a man of faith is when that happens and someone says, no, you've got to look at things the way they really are, that they snap back. And they say, that's right. And are able to put things back into perspective, take the reasonable steps, and proceed trusting God to do what's right. Okay. I didn't leave time for questions, so I will try to leave extra time for questions next week. Thanks.